Submitted for your approval. Submitted for your approval.
Another dimension.
Light for your approval.
Another dimension.
Light
for your shadow.
Another dimension.
Light
for your shadow.
Another dance
self.
Light
for your shadow.
Another twilight zone.
Submitted for your approval.
The twilight zone.
Submitted for your approval.
The twilight zone.
Hello, hello, hello. You're listening to a podcast not only of sound, but also of mind. It's Time to Rewind is a podcast that takes a journey into a wondrous land of time loops whose boundaries are that of imagination. I'm your host, Bubba Wheat, and each episode, my guest and I explore these time loops one loop at a time. This stop is Trapped in the Twilight Zone, and this is the fourth stop at 2019's Season 1, Episode 3, Replay, starting at 23 minutes and 19 seconds with a rewind montage ending with Nina relieved that Dorian is still alive and ending at 37 minutes and 42 seconds with Dorian walking through the gate to college, Officer Lasky retreating, and Neil giving Nina a quick, damn, sis. Joining me today is my guest, Ryan Bennett for Black Girl Nerds. How are you doing today?
Good. Thank you so much, Nathan, for having me. This is cool. Like I was telling you before we started, it gives me an excuse to check out Twilight. I've been putting it off and wanting to get into the sci-fi of it off, so it was cool.
Yeah, it's a great series, and I've enjoyed the chance to look back a lot of these classic episodes and really dig into a couple of the Jordan Peele episodes that really have a more classic time loop in it. And this, this is a big loop, so I think I want to go ahead and get right into it. So this is like the big climactic loop. It's the longest one. It has kind of the climax to it. And then, it starts off with the Nina showing the relief that it worked. Cause I think this is the first time that she really, put her faith in this magic camcorder. Right.
Right. Yeah.
And then this time she decides to try and get ahead of Officer Lasky there in the diner and try to leave before he gets there. But he still ends up being right there, kind of larger than life, and in a brief moment of tension as he potentially blocks the door. Whenever you watch this the first time, did you think that something was going to happen, or do you think that she was just going to go through?
This episode, and I know that we're at the specific loop right now, but throughout this entire thing, I was just always nervous. I never knew what was going to happen. I was like, if it's not her son, then they're going to come after, maybe he's going to come after Nina. Maybe he's going to get tired of, there's something else going on here and working where it's like, maybe it's not going to be about the son anymore. And it turns into her, if she keeps rewinding. But yeah, I didn't think she was going to make it through. I was like, oh gosh, this is going to be bad. Cause it's that final confrontation where it's like, she's not running anymore. Like she's finally trying to figure out, how do I stop this? And what do I do? Well, she's kind of running, but it's like, as the more you work your way through this episode, it became more of like a confrontation. And it's like, she was like, okay, I'm not going to get away. I gotta figure out another scenario than just to run and get in my car.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting that most of the time, whenever he is introduced in frame, he's always typically obscured or like he's shown in a reflection. And this time he's not really obscured by anything specifically, but he does have the sun behind him. So we do get a little bit of a lens flare that does partially obscure him, even though he takes up most of the frame.
Yeah, yeah, and all it adds to just the, the evilness of this character, the fear that's behind this character whenever he appears. It's just like that mysterious tone that Twilight does so well, mm-hmm. that you can't really figure it out. Like, it just lets your mind wonder so many different scenarios of who this officer is, because you have your baseline, which I'm sure, your racial undertones, which I'm sure Jordan Peele had just a ball, the way he loves to mix his material up like that and get those messages out in different ways to see how it hits the audience. But there's that other feel of just straight, just evil and fear for her all the time when he appears. And like you said, that the way they obscure him, the way he's the way he enters just all of a sudden when you think he's done, mm-hmm. Leads to all that as you go throughout the episode.
Yeah, like even at the beginning of this, like right before they leave, there is that brief little rack focus that shows the empty spot at the diner table where he was sitting in the previous loops.
Yeah, that diner is like, it makes me a little nervous to go to diners now. I'm going to tell you, like, it kind of got stuck in my head there. I was like, oh man, like, could she get away from this diner? Like, she just wanted to stop with her son and just have a meal before going to college. And it's turned into this whole, like, you always got to go back to this moment. You're like, okay, what's she going to do next? Like, has she run out of options?
Yeah, but I do like how it's the episode in general portrays Nina as very intelligent, because you know, the next thing that they do, because there is that moment of tension, but he just smiles and lets them out the door, and Dorian, you know, says thanks as they walk out, because he at this point is still oblivious to the whole situation. And you know, Nina has a little bit of a breakdown, and they pull off the side of the road, and she learns from the previous one, and she actually pulls all the way into like the driveway of what looks like an abandoned barn or abandoned shed, like a really worn down shed. And there's a couple trees. So it looks like they're probably obscured from the road, so that if the cop did drive past, there's a good chance that he wouldn't notice them there.
Right, right. Yeah, I love how it's always that moment where you think, oh, they're clear. And you settle into that as an audience member. And you're like, okay, we're finally done. But it's like, nope. We got more. There's more than this camcorder, which I love that about this episode, that keeps pulling you through.
And we're surprised. And whenever she, like, basically this is the moment where she tries to convince Dorian, and then just a little bit later, Neil, that she's stuck in this time loop with this, or not so much stuck in this time loop, but she has this magic camcorder that can turn back time. And instead of the typical, like the trope where she would have to prove it to them in some way, both of them just immediately believe her.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was definitely surprised by that, because I'm so used to, like, when you're in that sci-fi world, or it's always like you say, you always have to prove it. So I'm very surprised. And maybe it's just the, you know, the trust they have in her somewhat, just knowing her so well, which I guess is kind of a relief to kind of change up that storyline a little bit. So I guess that was an interesting pick. But yeah, I was definitely surprised. They were just like, okay, look, we're going to dig in. We're going to figure this out. You know, because who's going to believe, like, it's old school, like everybody's on their iPhones taking videos and pictures and stuff. Like, who's going to believe his camcorder can do all this kind of stuff, you know? Yeah. Like, and she's able to, like, pull them in just in the nick of time.
Yeah. And I think it's funny. And whenever she's like going through, like, I don't know if it's in my head or if it's a parallel dimension or if it's a glitch in the Matrix. And I think it's funny whenever she mentions the Matrix, it's the shot is it's like from outside of the car. And there's raindrops on the windows, and there is a slight green tint to it because they're surrounded by trees. So I thought
cool.
That was funny.
I didn't even notice that. It's really cool. Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was a nice, it's like so many cool, like you said, so much with the scenery and the lighting that was so really done well in this episode.
Yeah. And I love Dorian's line where he says, there's nothing magical about knowing. And then he goes on to say, the only way we haven't taken can get us to school. And that's, you know, this is him referring to getting help from their uncle Neil. Well, from his uncle Neil, her brother.
Yeah. I love that. I love to like the, and I'm sure you're probably going to touch this a little bit too, as we keep moving, but just the touchstone on her past and, you know, just a lot of reflection on, like, you can't run from it like you think you want to. And sometimes you don't need to.
Yeah,
you know, like that was, yeah.
Yeah, she like immediately refers to it as home. Mm-hmm. And then she never explicitly says it, but I think it heavily implies that this is their childhood home. And and I imagine that Neil probably inherited it after their father died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really cool to see that they, you know, and it was really a reflection on Nina as far as like, okay, what are you going to do here? Like, you know, I know there's like a tough family history for you here. You know, I was a little shocked that she went all the way back, but you know, when it comes to her son, you know, she's going to do whatever it takes. But I was a little shocked that she finally was like, okay, I need to go back to my childhood, to my childhood home where it started, to see if I can figure this out. You know, maybe my son knows a little better. But at the same time, I mean, he went with her story instead of questioning, like, mom, have you lost your absolute mind? So I guess I would have went with him too. I guess I would have been like, hey, maybe this is the solution we need.
Yeah, I think it shows the bond that the two of them have that we see throughout this episode, that they're very close to each other. That it really is. you know, mother and son. And, you know, you get the impression that the father's not in the picture, but there's no mention that the father's not in the picture.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that is a good point. Yeah, I was wondering that it myself. I'm like, is that a, you know, just a relationship that went bad? They're just divorced. Because you know, she very much Needham very much made it known that, you know, it's just the two of them. That's all she has. Mm-hmm. And you know, and she has to protect them no matter what. And that's pretty much her world right now. So it does kind of make you think, it's like, you know, is it just one of those things where the dad's just not right here right now? You know, did something go that wrong where she's like, okay, I'm not really gonna mention him? You know, that's not really a factor right now, but that's a good point you bring up. Like, that's a question you have. Like, she's talking about all the people she can pull on, and when you're going to seek help, it's like, well, you know, is the dad still in the picture?
Yeah, and she also doesn't include him, like, because she does have a brief moment where she talks about how basically she lost both of her older brothers and her uncle through, well, she specifically mentions that her uncle died through violence in her old neighborhood. And then I think that also implies that her two older brothers also died through violence, even though she doesn't explicitly say it for those two.
Yeah. And gives you that other, again, comes back in with that mysterious, like, almost, you know, dread in a sense, where it's like, okay, there's something in this town. There's something going on here that we need to explore more. Or, you know, maybe this is the reason why she ran away and was like, I never need to come back here again. And it just, you know, it's that more, I know I was on the edge of my seat. It was just more that suspense of what she's going to find. And is she digging even more of a deeper hole for herself? It was one of the questions that popped in my head.
Yeah. And, you know, just a brief kind of lighter reference that I definitely, you know, as somebody who runs a superhero movie blog, I have to point out the fact that his Neil, the first thing he mentions to Dorian is he has a box in the garage with Black Panther number one by Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Yeah.
And I wasn't super familiar. Like, are you familiar with that run?
Yeah, I haven't, it's been a while since I've kind of like dived into it around the movies, but yeah, that's so cool that he has that addition. And like you said, I just love that they took that little break from everything and was like, look, I'm gonna bring this comic book reference. If you're, like you said, another fellow superhero fan of you here, of course, Black Panther always. So that was just so cool for them to take that moment to kind of throw that in. And he's like, look, don't mess it up. You can tell he's a collector. He's like, don't mess it up. You got to keep that mint issue. And you know, anything with Ta-Nehisi Coates and you got to have that, like, you got to keep that, you know, nice and covered up, and you never know what's going to happen having that mint issue and everything. So that's cool.
Yeah. And I think that's interesting, but you know, if somebody that's not familiar with that, they might think that that's, you know, an older comic, but you know, for people that don't know, and I was someone who I didn't know, cause I'm a superhero movie guy more than the comics. So I did have to look it up, but it was the first of two series that he wrote. They're both 25 issue series that started in 2016. And the first run was called The Nation Under Our Feet. And the second run was The Intergalactic Empire of Wakanda. And this was actually Coates's first entry into fiction, because previously he was more well known by his nonfiction work, and I thought that was interesting, that, you know, to get this acclaimed nonfiction author to come in and write, you know, not just a couple issues but 50 issues of Black Panther.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. It's amazing. Yeah, like you, yeah, the movie was the first that drew me in, but yeah, just kind of going back and the movie now makes you want to kind of dig into the comics more. So yeah, I thought that was just a cool, you know, with everything going on with that part of Marvel right now with the Black Panther, that was such a cool nod for him to be able to, you know, to throw that in. And then at that time too, when you're thinking when this episode first aired, being able to share something like that is really cool.
Yeah, which when this episode aired, it would have just been, you know, 3 years old. So it is more like, it's not so much a collector's issue. It is to a certain extent, but it's more like a speculator's issue. You know, it's saving true. It yeah. with the prediction that it's going to become worth something in the future.
Yeah, yeah. So hopefully he doesn't mess it up. Hopefully he keeps it boxed away somewhere nice.
Yeah. And then we get inside Neil's house, and, you know, this is really gorgeous. And there is so much that, you know, I wasn't able to really dig into a lot of it because there is a ton of stuff in this. And we get this shot, and I do kind of love this shot because it's like a frame within a frame, because the camera is positioned like in the, I think, the kitchen, or, you know, in one room, and then the two of them are in the next room, and they're framed by this like giant entryway, and it's just stacks upon stacks everywhere in this side room, with like there's blueprints, it looks like a stack of VHSs on top of books, and there's even like some film reel canisters on the top of one shelf, and the most prominent thing is a hand-painted Black Lives Matter protest sign on the side, which really draws your eye. And on top of that, I also got like a 70s vibe from just the overall decoration of the house, like the look of it with the wallpaper. Did you get that as well?
That kind of old school, you know,
like almost yellowish,
grounded within the community, you know, very much like historical, you know. He seemed like a researcher, like you're kind of saying, like, you know, he had definitely had the film equipment and everything, and you know, kind of explains the draw of why you know, why her son wanted to go there so bad. Like, you kind of see where his passion might have developed from. And it's very like grassroots, you know, old school. I love that. I love that feel that they kind of kept in the episode.
Yeah, I think it's, I think a good way to refer to Neil would be a local historian.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause he talks about, you know, he's seen this neighborhood becoming more gentrified, and he is doing his best to collect as much information as he can with the history of the area, and talking to all the older neighbors that have lived there for a long time. And you know, I think that's great. And another thing that we do get throughout the house a bit is there's at least a couple very large paintings of a raised clenched fist, which is another symbol that's been taken up by the Black Lives Matter movement. And I did look up the history a little bit, and according to Reader's Digest, the first likely appearance of a clenched fist used as a symbol was actually back in France during the 1848 revolution that resulted in the abdication of King Louis-Philippe, which was the last reigning French monarch. And it was, you know, one of several insurrections throughout Europe in that year. And there was a French artist, Honoré Daumier, and he is said to have been so affected by the passion of the revolutionaries that he painted The Uprising, the name of this portrait, to represent their fighting spirit. And at the center of this piece was a man with rolled up sleeves and a clenched fist. And I think more recently, and it's become, I think, most well known because it was also the symbol of the Black Panther group.
That's where I know it from. Yeah.
And in that context, it was also referred to as the Black Power fist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I like that. I mean, it's always cool to get like to go all the way back or get a different history view. So that's really cool. Yeah. To be able to, that you found that, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's always been a symbol of revolution and change and, you know, power to the people, I think. And that's, that's still what it is, where it's a symbol representing power to the Black community and the Black people in this country in order to help, you know, give them power from, you know, years of being repressed through various means. And I think this episode does a good job of representing that to some extent.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely for the, that year for the years to come, the way it brings in, you know, the confrontation of the Black community and police, and, you know, a different way of kind of, you know, not exactly giving you a, you know, not shoving in your face in a sense, but it's very subtly moved throughout this episode where you figure out, okay, this is the Tony trying to present, you know, day-to-day lives, how Black community feels when it comes to police, you know, that sense of, you know, can you escape it? Or, you know, is that a mentality to have? Can you just, you know, can you lead with love? Can you lead with understanding? Can you stand up for yourself? You know, and that makes the burden a little less to have to deal with that, you know, very real reality that helps in a lot, you know, with young Black men or, you know, just trying to be, you know, successful like our son. He's just trying to get to college. Yeah. And the whole time it's just coming up with, you know, this police officer has just got some kind of vendetta, something he can't drop, something he can't lose. And I love the fact that Nina gets to point out, hey, maybe you're the one that's scared. You know, I've been running this whole episode and maybe there's something going on with you that you need to face. And, you know, you don't get to kind of dictate the situation anymore. And I thought that was really cool. Something, a different outlook for that. I thought was so cool that was pointed out in this episode, or something I took away, a different way of looking at it.
Yeah. And, you know, back in the house, I think another thing that Neil says is he says they always come. And I think that he's specifically using that specific language as like an othering tactic, where he's trying to shift the balance of power from this one single cop to this Black family as they're starting to get more strength in numbers as this episode leads to the climax. And he also brings up like some perceived mysticism in their past and with their ancestors. Do you think that is there to help explain why the camera is magic?
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting to put that in, because, you know, with Twilight Zone being an anthology, which is something cool for me to kind of research and go back into, it allows you to kind of throw that supernatural way into dealing with, like, you know, what human beings deal with every day. And like we keep talking about the racial undertone of it. And I thought that was such an interesting turn to say, okay, let's explain this camcorder a little bit more. Let's not make it so mysterious of, okay, now she's just getting around this magical camcorder. It had a family, you know, history to it, a family tie to kind of pull on her background, which I thought was so interesting, especially since they're giving us this picture of her being so torn from her family. And you're like, well, what happened? Like, you know, how did you get this? Like, what's going on? You know, and it kind of brings us back to that full circle moment of, okay, now she has to face this. You know, she has the, you know, talk to her brother, you know, confront a lot of the hurt that she's had, talk about her father, what happened there, you know, him giving this to her, like what all that meant.
Yeah. And there is this sense of them being estranged, because we do get Neil saying that Nina didn't even come back for her father's funeral. But at the same time, during this mysticism, the conversation, he mentions that their father always had this perceived connection between him and Nina, where he felt like he always knew where Nina was. So I think that's kind of shows that the father always felt that the two of them had a similar connection in the same way that Nina and her son did, even though they don't really discuss what's potentially broke that connection from Nina's side of things.
Yeah, I'm like, did he rewind the camcorder too much? Like, I was going right back to the camcorder. I was like, well, what was the time? You know, did he know something about her life that she didn't? Yeah, I got very caught up in like the magic, the mystery of the camcorder that I thought was really cool for them to play off of.
Yeah, and then after this, you know, we get into almost like, you know, a very slow chase scene with them going through this narrow alleyway and then down into the tunnels. And we also get this shot of Lasky just, you know, rolling down his window. We don't see where he is because it's a very close shot on the police car with the lights on, but not any of the sirens, and him just looking around. But one thing I was thinking about, and, you know, let me ask you, like, in the context of this specific loop, why do you think that the officer is looking for the two of them so hard right now?
I feel like leading up to this point, he got a couple glimpses where he was just like, okay, what's going on here? But I think it's just the way I read into it was, it's just that thing where it's like, you don't necessarily have to be doing something, you know, when it comes to like a racial issue or just a police officer that's just got his mind set on what his beliefs are. And, you know, maybe he has something against the college. Maybe he's, you know, he's trying to find whatever he can, something that looks different. And being a historically Black college, a lot of Black students there, just something that maybe he just, you know, he's just there and he's just looking for a reason. And I think that was like a point of the episode where it's just like, you're letting that fear just, no matter what, just kind of consume you. And it's just like, what is he really getting out of this? Like, what is really the point? Like, what are they doing that's so like, you know, okay, they came up out of this door, but it's just like, was it really that mysterious for the situation to escalate where it escalated to?
Yeah, to where
I think was the point. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like following them to another town, you know,
right.
They're several miles away, even though he is a state trooper. So his jurisdiction would be the entire state of Virginia. But yeah, it doesn't make sense unless you expand on it. And I think that you could potentially explain it that even though he doesn't have, like, he doesn't remember exactly what happened in the previous loops, but I think that there could be some sort of like latent memory to where he has like a feeling of the past loops. Or I have a theory that I feel like he's almost supposed to be like a representation of the devil.
Oh yeah, that's a good, yeah I can see that. Yeah, that's a good, yeah, because they mentioned a lot of evil going towards the end, so yeah, that's a good, yeah, I can see that as well. Yeah,
yeah. And I think that would explain why he keeps going after them with such resolve and with such persistence across all these time loops, because, you know, no matter what she does, he always comes after them, even though, especially in this one, their only interaction was she looked a little frazzled whenever they walked past him by the door. And yet he seeks them out and comes after them. Like I referred to him in, you know, in previous episodes of this, that he kind of reminds me of like the racist Terminator.
Yeah, that's actually a really good, I like that description. Yeah, that's really accurate. Yeah, he just doesn't stop. Like, it's just like, no matter what, he doesn't stop. Like you said, he does. You can obviously tell there's some moments where it's definitely racist and what comes out of his mouth and just the way the scene is viewed.
Yeah, he has a lot of another guest referred to it as microaggressions, and I kind of like that, you know, where he specifically mentions it as like the Black college. And I think even just his use of language, even, you know, jumping just a little bit ahead in this loop, he has the line here, "Since you are incapable of grasping the situation," which it's very, like, he uses very large words. And yeah. I've said before that I feel like this is his implying his superiority to them, where his use of large words implies his intellectual superiority over them. And on top of that, that line itself especially is diminishing, is like calling them stupid, you know, since you're incapable of understanding what's going on.
Yeah, just that entire line, you know, incites the anger that he's trying to get for them anyway. But yeah, just very much is, you know, trying to show them, like you said, very beneath him, that he's more superior, you know, just what he thinks of them overall, which, you know, lends a little bit back to, you know, why I kind of felt like it was really putting a spotlight on, do you really, you know, that the having that racism and just the fact of, at a certain point, it's very evident to everybody else except for the person dealing with it, that's you know, that is a racist, that does have that fear, his own demons and stuff he needs to deal with, where it's like, at what point do you stop? Because you obviously don't have a better reason right now. So at what point do you stop what you're doing?
Yeah, and they almost have like a literal spotlight, because we get this shot with the camera showing the two of them like in the gate, and there's like a metal circle in the gate, and it literally encircles Neil and Officer Lasky and like puts them in this like almost literal spotlight.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love. Yeah, like you said, it's just a very, very well done how they play off the light in the background and those moments to kind of pause and where it's like it's pulling you out of the moment a bit, but it's not. It's like a really good pause to kind of have you take everything in.
Yeah, and then let me ask you. I'm curious because since did you watch the whole season or just this episode?
Just this episode, but this makes me want to go back and because I'm curious of I wish I would have had more time to kind of lead up to this because I'm so curious about what some of the other issues that were probably brought up in the different episodes and everything.
Yeah, there is a blink and you miss it reference to the first season finale. You see the back of a man in a gray suit holding a cigarette, and and he ends up being the final episode is called Blurry Man, and I think they have references to him in other episodes in the first season as well. And then at the end of that episode, he's revealed to be Rod Serling.
Wow, now that's cool. Okay, yeah, because I kind of was just looking through the frame, you'll see little weird moments like that, but not having seen the rest of it, it didn't dawn to me. So that's really cool.
Yeah, and then we get this climax, which let me ask you, what do you think Lasky is trying to arrest them for? Because and also, this amps up the escalation even further, because every time that they interact with Lasky, there's some sort of escalation where it gets more violent more quickly. And in this one, he just immediately draws his gun. That's the first thing that he does.
Yeah, well, on the surface, he's like, hey, you need to stop. And they're obviously not listening. And she's trying to get her son into school because that's the whole point of what she's been fighting for this entire episode, is to have him safely walk through those gates to get to college. She talks about everything that she sacrificed to make sure her son goes to college. And so the fact that they're not stopping, they're not listening the first time, it makes reference to a lot of stuff that's going on in a lot of the protests, a lot of stuff that's going on in the Black community, things that's being spotlighted, where it's like, why is that your first reaction? Just because they're not listening to you, you could grab, you don't want to say Greg, because sometimes that can escalate too, to get dangerous as well, if he was to put his hands on them. But just these non-lethal references first, because it's not like they're throwing something at him. They're just they're still walking, even though he's like, okay, stop, wait, you got to tell me this, you got to tell me that. But why is the first reaction to be like, okay, let me go ahead and pull my gun out?
Yeah. The only thing that they did was come out of this drainage ditch. So
yeah,
basically it's trespassing is the only thing that I can think of that he might potentially get them for, it's really just blatant racism, which is how the episode presents it, especially as it keeps going through. And then we get this confrontation, this big full-blown confrontation, which this is, I think there's some good moments in this scene, but I also feel like this is my least favorite part of this scene. And I think for people that don't like this episode as a whole, I think it comes down to this scene particularly. Let me ask you before I get to my thoughts. What did you think about this whole confrontation with the crowd and between Nina, Neil, and Lasky?
I think Nina addressed Lasky towards the end how she needed to. It makes you, I think the way that it escalated with his backup coming and more guns being pulled out, obviously is an unsettling feeling, not my favorite to see on screen, but also had its place, like many other things in this episode that it was trying to spotlight, like you said, just blatant racism. Mm-hmm. And how far it can escalate for no good reason. But yeah, I think my thing I took away from this was I loved her speech of, finally being able to stand up, even though that can be so dangerous and nerve-wracking for what it could lead to. But she had finally had enough. And she was like, I want to get my son to college. I want him to go through, it symbolized something more for him to walk through those gates without somebody always trying to, without Officer Lasky trying to prevent him from doing that, and that stopping him meant something more than just, you know, a police officer just sitting there trying to arrest him for, like you said, the most he would have is trespassing, which is really not what he was there for. But yeah.
And I get that there is like a bigger symbolic, because it's not, because like you mentioned, all Nina wants is for her son to walk through those gates and get to college. And Officer Lasky represents the oppression of white privilege, the oppression of racism. And the one thing that I do love about this climax is her speech, where she talks about, you're harassing us, profiling us. And as she goes on, I think listening to it, it goes through a cycle. At first, I feel like you think that she's talking about specifically what Lasky has been doing to them, the two of them, throughout the episode. And then I took a step back and I was like, well, technically from his perspective, this is the first time that he's going after them. So that doesn't make entire sense. But then I come back around and I realize that she's using the greater us, as in, Black people as a whole, and talking about police as a whole, and making this greater statement, this speech, speaking to the entire crowd of college students and their parents. And, we haven't mentioned, for people that might not have seen this episode, but the entire crowd is all recording this confrontation with all of their phones, and Nina has the magic camcorder pointed at them as well.
Yeah. I think there was a lot of, like you said, I think the main thing people will take away, if they don't like the scene, is definitely her speech. Is everybody rallying behind her? Because like you said, it kind of like the audience, they start to understand what she's talking about, what's going on. Because at first it's just a scary situation where you have all these officers rushing in with guns. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of see, I think it's interesting how they cut back to, like you said, the audience behind her and the different shots that they take, where you can kind of see them cluing into like what's going on, and that they need to, have her back in a sense. And everybody starts to pull out their phones and everybody's like, well, let me step a little closer, as this barrier to show him like, hey, we're all standing here. We see you. You need to make the right decision here. There are a lot of eyes on you right now, so you're not going to get away with this like you think you're going to get away with it. Nobody's hiding and rushing away from the scene.
Yeah, everybody's recording the it's like everybody's recording the hard truth of the situation, and it is a hard truth that's difficult for a lot of people to look at, because for a lot of people it can be all too real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this scene definitely, it could definitely be a shock and a hit. And that's why I can see some people, maybe not liking the scene, because it'll definitely hit you. Like I said, that was one of those moments that will stick out when Officer Lasky has all those officers backing him up and they're all pointing the guns. That's like one of those moments that'll definitely probably stick and probably was meant to hit that way. But those are like some of the harder moments, for me to have to see. But yeah, this scene, like you said, this scene has some moments where it was like touch and go, but you get where, why it was important to have this moment for her to finally have this confrontation. Like we've said several times, it was just a speech. It was like, if you're going to pick anything out of this that you want to take away, or that might've been a favorite to have, would be what her conversation was, and how she had to, defend her son when, maybe everybody else was like, okay, we got to back off from here. This is going to end badly. It's not going to go the way we think it's going to go. So it's very interesting. And like you said, just all the phones out and everything. I think too, there's so many different angles you can take, so many things going on in the scene where it does kind of allow your mind to wander, whether you're like, do I like this a lot? Did this help me, understand the mystery behind it? Do I get the point of the plot, and does everything tie up well? But yes, definitely everything came to head in this moment, whether you enjoyed it or not, or whether you understood it or not.
Yeah, I think my biggest complaint against it is it feels too, blatant. Like it feels very heavy handed in its symbolism. And I feel like maybe it would have been better if it was a little bit more subtle, but there are a lot of good elements to it. And I understand that limited by the time constraint. I'm not sure if they could have gone that much more subtle. I don't have any specific ideas of what they could have done instead. And that said, I do love Nina's speech in this, and I do think it's important to have this conversation, like to have this as something that's starting a conversation and putting this out there as, you know, art that reflects life.
Right, right. Yeah. And I think that's why there's probably some of their hard hitting moments. But like you said, there's always that room to play with, you know, what you want to take with the scene. You know, is there another way to present it? Sometimes you got to go the hard route where everybody maybe can't stand to watch it, but it's something that maybe somebody, at least one person, took something away from it. They learned something from it. You know, maybe it's, you know, when you can put the sci-fi, that's what I think is so interesting about, you know, something like Twilight Zone, when you put that sci-fi element to it, it kind of draws people in, you know, because that kind of fantasy that, like you said, if you're into the time loop and the different time zones, but then they hit you with that reality moment where it's like a lot of people are facing this on a day-to-day basis. And it's like, how do you feel how that message was presented to you? And, you know, whether it's subtle or not, you know, what did you take away from it? And, you know, just being able to appreciate, I guess, that storytelling in a sense where you can take something like this show and use it to kind of, to put a spotlight on the issue. Maybe people are trying to run from or don't completely understand.
Yeah. And then there was one other moment that I wanted to bring up. And there is this moment right before Nina starts her speech where Dorian comes up and mentions, you know, why don't we go ahead and rewind and try again? And I love that Nina refuses and she decides to go through with it. And I think that really shows her strength of character and how she's grown as a character just over the course of this single episode.
Yeah. Yeah, I love how they use that. Like that rewind button almost becomes, like I believe you mentioned before, like her, it stops her from running from fear at that moment. You know, she can always like go back and it's like, oh no, okay, I can run and then I can go back again. And then I can go back this time and I don't have to face this and I don't have to figure out what's going on. I'll just keep rewinding. But you know, life doesn't work like that. You know, I bet there's some moments we all wish we had a rewind button to go back and, you know, redo it again. And I like how they take out that magic for a moment and they're like, nope, we're not rewinding this moment. You gotta face this and we're coming to a head here and this is what it's all about. And what are you gonna do in this situation?
Yeah. And then that brings us to the end of this. You know, we get her and the crowd, they basically get their victory over the police officers. They retreat and Dorian walks into college. And I like the little moments that Neil says that I mentioned in my opening, where he just says, "Damn, sis."
I thought that was a hilarious moment, and just being able to see the both of them walk through, like, you know, the parted crowd, and Nathan finally being able to go into college. The whole thing we keep saying over and over again, and the whole point of us getting through this episode was cool that got to happen towards the end. But yeah, I love their brother and sister moment where you can see they're finally coming. Like he, you know, you can kind of see the way he looks. And even in that phrase, like something's changing, it's different. You know, the dynamic between them, he understands now, or there's a different understanding between them. He looks at his sister different now, which I thought was cool.
Yeah. And that brings us to the end of this loop. Was there anything else that you wanted to bring up about this specific loop?
No, I just I definitely appreciate it. Like we've been saying, some of the messages, I love how they brought in even like little elements, like you pointed out so well, the lighting, the background, you know, whether you're with the officer, you know, are you dealing with the devil, evil, like total evil itself? You know, what does he represent? So many different elements to bring that in. So, yeah, I really, really enjoyed this episode and that it was, you know, really important for just like future to come, times we're living in now. It gives you a different perspective if you're, you know, about Black Lives Matter and a lot of those issues and stuff that are continuing to go on that people want to continue to highlight.
Yeah. And so that brings us to the classic episode that I decided to watch, which was the Invaders, which was from season 2. It was episode 15. And I picked this one. I just picked this one from, you know, a list of the best Twilight Zone episodes out there. I thought it had an interesting premise. And there wasn't any specific connection to this episode. But this is an episode that has almost no dialogue in it. And so it is almost like one of the more gimmicky episodes. And it's this a simple like farm woman that lives in a simple cottage, and this small spaceship arrives, and these two little, you know, very toy looking aliens come and start attacking her, and she has to fend them off. And it's got a lot of great moments of tension throughout the episode. And then we get to the twist at the end, whenever she finally does defeat these aliens, and she like smashes their very classic saucer shaped spaceship. And we get the twist that we hear through the radio that comes through in English. And we find out that this is from Earth, and that they're likely on another planet, and it's this planet of giants, and the aliens were actually from Earth the entire time, and it was the woman that was the alien. And you said that you watched this. What did you think about this episode?
I thought, first of all, with having the little aliens be like hilariously laughing at the beginning of it. And I do not like, I would purely recommend this just to go back to the 50s of just like effects and how visually things looked in TV and film. Cause it was so interesting to think back to now. Like, we have so many effects and just the way they do screens and everything now that it's hard to remember back, you know, from the start when they had to do it. And then the fact too that the main actress or the lead is just going off of like she's crying, it's different sound effects, she doesn't have a lot of dialogue.
She doesn't have any dialogue,
but you're still able to follow the story. Well, that's true. Yeah, right. Yeah, I was trying to go back and see if she even said anything in the beginning, but yeah, she doesn't, like no dialogue at all. And I don't know, it was just so interesting for me because it's just like I said, you get so used to, like, when you're talking about sci-fi, when you're talking about like superheroes or anything, the effects are so huge and it's so, you know, larger than it seems, but just having everything kind of like scaled down, and this is what they dealt with in the 50s, and how like visually, like in the 50s watching this, what people must have been thinking, like when that, you know, when that saucer like lands and the aliens are coming in our house and she's like, what's going on? And They're so tiny, but at the same time, you're thinking about like having these things in your house, and one of them is like coming at her with a knife. So it's just like, it's insane, but it's definitely like, I definitely applaud you for picking this episode, because it definitely puts a new twist. And then you're seeing this classic Twilight up until now. It's so interesting, that difference, that huge difference. It's in black and white. Like it's a huge difference.
Ray guns that fire, and they basically just create like small little welts on her body, it hurts, but it doesn't really do any lasting damage. I think that it's a great use of tension, and I think it is humorous in parts, especially because the aliens do, or the, you know, the astronauts and very toy robot looking spacesuits. They're very comical looking back at it now. And I think my other big complaint was, I thought that the actress, I thought that she makes a lot of like guttural noises and like a lot of grunts. And to me, they felt very weird. Like they didn't sound natural.
I thought maybe I'm being a little too harsh, because this was like that time period, and maybe that's how I go, but I did think it was like, sometimes I thought it was over the top, but I didn't know how I react if I had like these little astronaut people in my house. But I did think it was like a little over the top at some moments, where I was just like, I kind of see where she's going.
It almost like she was trying to give like a
that definitely pulls you out,
like a classic caveman.
Yeah, it definitely pulls you out. There are definitely moments where you're just like, okay, maybe dial it down just a little bit on these aspects, because sometimes the tension didn't seem as intense as she was making it sound.
I think that's one of the more difficult things, where the tension is accidentally broken just by the comical nature of us looking at it from a more modern perspective and seeing these more classic acting style, acting choices. But other than that, I thought it was a great episode, and I'm glad that I picked this one to watch. But you know, I think that brings us to the end of our episode today. I'd like to thank you for talking with me about it.
Thank you. Yeah. Again, thank you for pulling me into this world. Like I said, I love the sci-fi feel of the Twilight Zone. I've always wanted to get into it. And now I got to go back and watch some more episodes because, you know, I want to see Rod Sterling kind of appear in this and how that unfolds. But it's kind of got me hooked now because it's so cool and so interesting the way the episodes end. And you're kind of left to kind of figure out your own messages. And did you understand the message? So, yeah, thank you. I really appreciate you having me be a part of this. It's cool.
I think I usually hear that the first season tends to be kind of hit and miss. And then the second season is a little bit stronger overall. There's definitely some better episodes and some not so great episodes, but it tends to be, you know, if it hits for you, like I enjoyed most of the episodes whenever I went through them, and I still haven't gone back and finished the second season, which it's more difficult now because I dropped Paramount Plus for a while. Maybe I'll go back to it and catch up again. Yeah. But, you know, for people listening and anybody that wants to hear more of you, why don't you go ahead and let them know where they can find you online?
Yes, you can check me out at Black Girl Nerds Podcast on all social media platforms at Black Girl Nerds. Also, November Bear on Twitter, where you'll see me post a lot of stuff as well. And yes, it's been great to talk to you guys about Twilight.
No problem.
Thanks again, Nathan.
And as always, I am Bubba Wheat, and you can find me at flightstightsandmovienights.com. You can find me on Twitter at Bubba Wheat, and you can find this show, It's Time to Rewind, on anchor.fm, as well as anywhere else that you listen to podcasts. And we also have a Facebook group, It's Time to Rewind, a time loop group, and you can join that and discuss episodes as they come out, and also have any sort of discussions or share memes about time travel movies in general. That's a lot of fun there, and I like to see that group continue to grow. And until next time, I will be right here, trapped in the Twilight Zone.
Submitted for your approval.
Another dimension.
It's a light for your approval.
Another dimension.
It's a light for your
shadow. Another dimension.
It's a light for your
shadow. Another dimension.
Self.
It's a light
for your shadow.
Another Twilight Zone.
Submitted for your approval.
The Twilight Zone.
Submitted for your approval.
The Twilight Zone.
Harassing us. Abusing authority. You've been profiling us, targeting us, following us, shooting us, killing us. Not anymore. Now we cross the line. My son will cross that gate. Right now, right here.